You're listening to Sounds Good. I'm Todd Hatton. The 2014 Kentucky General Assembly is underway, and as you'd expect, there's a lot going on in Frankfort these days. And here to help us sort it all out is Kentucky Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief, Jonathan Meter. First off, thanks for coming on. I know you're pretty busy these days.
Oh, well, not a problem. It's manageable. Today, due to the snow, it's a little slower, so my pleasure.
Well, there are a lot of bills moving quickly this session. One of them would grant domestic violence protections for dating couples. But there's an interesting twist in the form of one of its pending amendments. Could you tell us about the bill and this amendment?
Sure. You're referring to House Bill 8, which has been filed by Representative John Tilley. Essentially, House Bill 8 aims to expand domestic violence protections to unmarried couples. Under current law, you can only get, say, a court protective order if you are married, you have a child with your alleged abuser, or you live together. And that got overwhelming support in committee, but since it was introduced on the floor, the amendment that you referred to was filed by Representative Joe Fisher, and it would essentially add restrictions on abortion. Currently, a woman can get an abortion up to 22 weeks of pregnancy. Fisher's amendment would reduce that to 20 weeks because he argues that at 20 weeks, fetuses begin to feel pain, essentially, and that he equated abortion as, quoting him, the most brutal form of domestic violence. So it's likely that Democrats, specifically members of the Women Caucus in the House, are going to challenge this amendment, whether or not it is germane to the intent of House Bill 8. So it's not likely that it will survive, but it's definitely an interesting twist.
Am I right in saying that historically big items like tax reform and the budget aren't going to see any action until the end of the 60-day session?
Yeah, that you are absolutely correct. Generally, I mean, the budget is going to be unveiled by Governor Beshear this Tuesday, and it's a complex beast. It has a lot of ins and outs, so it's going to take a while for lawmakers generally to, you know, haggle and horse trade over this and that provision. And generally, it can go all the way up to the end, and sometimes, you know, there can be a special session. But with tax reform, I know that Representative Jim Wayne has come out with a push to raise rates on higher earners and lower them on lower earners. He's historically been for that. As far as what the actual budget will probably look like, both leadership in both chambers they've guessed that whatever budget Beshear is going to propose, it will be revenue neutral. That seems to be a given. But whether you know, what kind of specifics of tax reform Beshear is going to include, he's been pretty tight-lipped on that end. So we'll find out Tuesday, I guess.
Well, one bill that's passed the House will give convicted nonviolent felons the right to vote, restore that right to vote. How many times has this bill been in the pipeline, and what are the odds it's going to pass the Senate?
Well, it's been in there a few times. I'm not exactly certain, but I would say this is probably maybe the third or fourth push, but Representative Crenshaw, who filed this bill, it's a perennial issue for him. Crenshaw is retiring this year, so he's more passionate about the issue than ever. Historically clears the House. As far as its chances in the Senate, where it usually winds up not being called for a vote or dying in committee, I had a chance to speak with floor leader Senator Damon Thayer, who he says that he is interested in supporting the bill if there are some amendments to the waiting period for which felons who are convicted of a nonviolent crime, the waiting period between their conviction and once they've served their sentence, when they can get their suffrage restored. Senator Rand Paul, he has issued support for this measure, and he plans to testify in the Senate committee hearing of the bill. And that is due to happen sometime in February. So it really seems that Senate support for this is contingent upon the kind of conversations and support that Paul himself can muster.
Hmm. Well, I suppose we should turn back to the budget and Governor Beshear's upcoming budget address Tuesday. Is anyone at the Capitol talking about this speech and what they'd like to hear in it?
Well, it's a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on it. As I said, the expectation is that it's going to be revenue neutral, that it's I mean, as far as that, what that says to tax reform, Beshear has said that he, again and again, he wants to reinvest in education to the tune of around $120 million, sort of restoring the SEEK formula, which that funding has been frozen since 2008. And in order to do that, Beshear has said he will make harmful cuts, if necessary, to other services. What those services are, neither Beshear nor Speaker Stumbo nor Senate President Stiers have indicated, although I'm aware that they have ideas, but they're sort of waiting to see what Beshear's budget will introduce first. But Beshear has also said that he, as far as tax reform goes, he's not going to, most likely not going to raise the corporate tax, and I infer that due to comments that he's made that he wants to keep Kentucky a great place to do business, and he doesn't want to add any extra burden to corporations. But by and large, people are keeping their cards close to their chest, just gearing up for Tuesday, I suppose, and then dealing with the fallout once it's unveiled.
Let's talk about what some of our local lawmakers are doing in Frankfort. Murray Representative Kenny Imes has filed legislation that turned some heads early on. It requires certain state employees like the governor and his cabinet leaders to drive from Fulton County to Pike County prior to starting their job. Is anyone talking about this? And if they are, what are they saying?
Well, I had a chance to speak with Representative Imes earlier this week, and he says that it's gotten a good reception. He stresses that at first blush, this could sort of be viewed as, you know, kind of a gimmick, if you will. But he seems earnest that in believing that by having members of state government, particularly policymakers, it wouldn't apply to legislators. Visit each corner of the state, that they'll have a better idea for the issues and concerns of the people who live there. It's going to get a committee hearing, so I guess we'll find out then, you know, what lawmakers really think about it. But again, it's not going to affect lawmakers directly, so it's not that they necessarily have skin in the game on this issue. But I'm sure that it will incur support due to the fact that the travel that Representative Imes' bill wants to make mandatory will not be reimbursed by the state, so the state will not be out any taxpayer funds to fund this bill. So I assume that provision alone, if they agree with the ideology behind it, will garner it some support.
Mm-hmm. Simpsonian Representative Will Corsi, while he's battling sexual harassment allegations, has filed a bill that would raise the minimum wage of tipped employees like waiters and waitresses in restaurants. The current wage is $2.13. It hasn't changed in a long time. What kind of reception is Representative Corsi finding for this bill?
Well, Representative, the bill has been filed to the Labor and Industry Committee. It hasn't received a hearing yet, but Corsi's bill is, in my estimation, part of a larger push by Democrats in the House this session to sort of address income inequality issues. House Speaker Stumbo has unveiled, you know, what they have considered to be their signature legislation, House Bill 1, which will raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour over the course of 3 years. And Corsi's bill seems likely to sort of ride the coattails of support for that bill by specifically addressing the food service industry sector. So I assume that whether there are detractors or supporters, that they will make themselves known during the Labor and Industry Committee hearing on the bill.
Well, I'd wrap this up by asking about Representative Ben Wade of Madisonville. You've reported on some of the legal challenges he's been facing. What's the story there?
Well, Representative Ben Wade has been accused by two of his partners at the physical therapy clinic that they have founded together, and his partners allege that Representative Wade has misappropriated company funds to fund his campaign, go on trips with his wife, other expenditures that they claim are sort of an improper use of company funds. Wade has fired back with a countersuit saying that this isn't true and that the evidence included in the original complaint concerns his personal financial expenditures, that these were not charged to the company. It was a personal credit card. But the attorney for the plaintiffs, I had to speak with him, as John Whitfield, I believe. He says that, well, Wade's credit card is in his name, but he billed it to the company. So it's at this point, it's sort of a he said kind of issue. And it's going to play out in court. But yeah, Wade has completely denied the charges and said that it's more or less politically motivated, which is interesting to me because one of the partners who filed the suit against him has donated to his campaign. But we won't know more until it actually goes to court, I guess.
Well, it looks like it's going to be another colorful General Assembly in Frankfurt. And helping us make sense of it all is Jonathan Meter. He's Kentucky Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief in Frankfurt. Jonathan, thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.